Welcome to the Employee Advocacy and Influence Podcast. My name is Bradley Keenan. I'm the founder and CEO of the employee advocacy platform Disseminate. And this is version two or season two of a podcast. So for people who have listened to it before will know that generally it's just me speaking. And essentially where we've got to with it is I've run out of stuff to say. So I've asked Lewis to join me on the podcast. So I'm going to hand over to Lewis now so he can introduce himself.
Yeah, my name's Lewis Gray. I'm Senior Marketing Manager here at Disseminate. Brad, I never thought I'd hear the day that you said you'd run out of things to say.
I'm just being polite. So this podcast, so when we originally had the idea of producing a podcast, we wanted to keep it really tactical. So when people were listening to it, they could essentially come away with something rather than this just be an opportunity to interview people and kind of get their life story. So the goal of this podcast remains the same, is that if somebody is listening to this, ideally, they are either running an employee advocacy program at the moment, or they are looking to launch one soon. And our objective is to give you information that can help you do that. And we try to keep everything platform agnostic. Obviously, we run an employee advocacy platform, but pretty much everything we speak about, you could put into place even if you weren't using employee advocacy platform. So this podcast is, we're going to try and pick topics or things to discuss. So we've come up with the idea of having this podcast focused around the three enemies of employee advocacy.
I'll start with what I consider to be one of the biggest enemies of employee advocacy, which is an outdated or just not up-to-date social media policy. So either not having a social media policy or having one that's outdated. And what I mean by that is, if you think back to the advent of social media, companies were introducing social media policies, but generally speaking, they took the approach of don't talk about us on social media, and if you do, you're in big trouble. What you have to consider is if you're trying to launch an employee advocacy program and you haven't communicated this change in attitude towards social, then your employees are going to assume that the attitude to them posting is exactly the same as it was when social media first came about, which is don't talk about us on social media or you'll get in trouble. So you either need to update your social media policy so that it clearly communicates this change in attitudes towards social, or you just need to write one. Brad, I don't know how many times you've seen this, but I've heard about so many companies who just don't have a social media policy at all.
100%. So your enemy of employee advocacy was one of mine, and I'd phrase it slightly different. So I had the enemy of employee advocacy being a fear-led social media policy, which is something that I see all the time. So people will say, we've got a social media policy. And essentially what that policy is a document that would, quite frankly, it would just scare the crap out of someone to ever actually post on social media, because it's just a list of things that can go wrong. And we had a client or a potential client who I spoke to a couple of months ago, and they were talking about their social media training, and basically their social media training was just, here's all the things that could go wrong. And I was saying, well, this isn't going to make people want to post on social media. It should be framed around, how do you do this in a way that essentially prevents it from going wrong in the first place. But corporate world, typically people are, you know, scared of getting things wrong, so the policy document will tend to lean that way.
Well, I think on that as well, I mean, fear-led is probably the better way of putting it, because that's exactly what it is. That's what these old social media policies are. It's also a case of getting it in front of your employees. So social media policies are typically in employee contracts and things like that, right? There's no reason to, I'm sure it's going to be on an intranet as well, if you wanted to access it and find out what the company's social media policy is. But unless, obviously it needs to be updated, but unless it's communicated that this has happened, they're going to be none the wiser. Even just doing something as small as sending out an email to, you know, all employees, just saying that you've updated your social media policy. But in terms of launching an employee advocacy program, just making it part of the onboarding process. So just getting the social media policy in front of them. But also kind of leads me on to another point, which is make it easy to digest. Because historically, and even still, social media policies are going to be written by, you know, legal departments. They'll definitely have their eyes on it. So as a result, that policy is just, or the document is, you know, pages long. It's just black and white text, and it's full of legal jargon that nobody really wants to read. If nobody wants to read it, and if it doesn't look engaging, they're just not going to read it anyway. So you could update your social media policy to make it pro-employee advocacy. But, you know, if it's a document that nobody's ever going to read, then you've kind of wasted your time. So it's a case of getting all three right, updating your social media policy, or potentially just writing one if you don't have one, getting it in front of them, but then also making sure it's a document they actually want to read.
Yeah, and there's a big movement now towards companies producing legal documentation, but doing it in a kind of palatable and design-led way. So we recently got approached by a company that were looking to take our master services agreement, our scope of works, which is essentially a legal document, but actually adding design to it. So it is something that's easy for people to read. So I think with social media policies, it should be no different that, you know, if you give someone a 45-page black and white document, nobody's going to read it, even the person who probably wrote it. So I would say that we're completely aligned on that one. So shall I move on to my first?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay, so this is actually a bit of a bugbear for me, and I'm probably going to upset some people with this one. But I think the number one enemy of employee advocacy is social media teams that focus on vanity metrics and don't care about actual outcomes. So what I mean by that is when an employee advocacy program is launched inside a company, it's typically the talent team, employer branding team, or the social media team that run the program, or a combination of both. And it should be a combination of both, because typically social media teams know how to write a social post, which is quite a critical ingredient in running an advocacy program. But what happens is that their own personal targets are not on business objectives, like high-level business objectives such as growing revenue, reducing churn, or whatever. Their metrics are grow likes on our company page. Mm-hmm. So what happens is when they launch the advocacy program, they see only value if it's actually hitting those metrics, even if it's raising significant awareness and reach outside of their corporate channels. They almost disregard that as valuable because their own personal metrics are those vanity metrics. So I think that's changing a bit now, where people are thinking about it more carefully. But I would say that is my number one pet peeve. And
yeah, I think it's one of those as well where it's like you can kind of understand the frustration, because like with any new initiative you launch, you want to be able to attribute the results, and you want to be able to measure the performance. With talent and employer branding especially, you're not always going to be able to. If your employees are sharing your content on social media, obviously that's great from a marketing side, sales side, whatever, you can measure the performance, but you can't really measure the impact that it's having on your employer brand, which is substantial, especially if you've got loads of employee generated content going into your platform for your colleagues to share. If you're sharing a lot of company culture content, like stuff from staff away days or behind the scenes content, that kind of thing, it's not necessarily going to be measurable, but it's a branding thing, right? You know, if loads of people are seeing your content, you have to realize you have to appreciate that's still having a significant effect on your employer brand.
Yeah, 100%. And the attribution thing is a big issue, because I mean, my previous incarnation before being involved in employee advocacy was in e-commerce, where everything was tracked. So how many people land on the page? How many people go to cart? What's the average order value of a cart? Everything's metrics. But when you've got so many different channels, where you've got some people posting on LinkedIn on the corporate channel, then you've got people posting, attribution's basically impossible. So you almost have to take a gut feel of, is this helping? And typically businesses don't really like that. So comparative media spend is pretty much the best metric to use, because you can look at, you know, what awareness did we get for the content, and what would that have cost if I'd gone elsewhere. Definitely. What's your second, Lewis?
My second one is, I feel like this is one of the most common ones, which is not communicating the employee benefits. And you can understand it. So this is communicating it with the people who are going to be participating in your program, because from a program manager's perspective, when they're evaluating employee advocacy tools, maybe they're on G2. If somebody landed on Disseminate's website, for example, the first things you're going to see are the business benefits. So you'll see the benefits for marketing, sales teams, employer branding teams, which is obviously super relevant, especially if you want to get this thing signed off. But when it comes to onboarding people and actually rolling out your program, you need to be able to communicate the employee benefits with the people who are going to be participating, because otherwise you know, you're going to invite them to this thing and their immediate thought is going to be, why would I do this? What's in it for me? So you have to kind of take a step back, put yourself in their shoes, consider their role as well. So let's say, for example, it's your sales teams. We know social media is playing an ever more important role in sales processes with social selling. It's going to be easy to communicate the benefits to them because you can say this will help you manage your social media presence. It's ready to share posts. Your marketing team, obviously, you can talk to them about the content they produce is going to be seen by more people. Employer branding people, for the reasons that we just mentioned, obviously, it's going to elevate their employer brand. So you can communicate those benefits. But for anybody outside of those departments, you have to focus on the personal branding benefits. So that could be, you could talk to them about the various benefits of personal branding. Let's talk about career opportunities, for example, whether that's external career opportunities, if you're talking about their long-term career, but you could also communicate the internal career opportunities that it brings. So to be seen as somebody who's participating in this thing and actually, you know, supporting marketing campaigns and, you know, promoting the company's message and seems to be somebody who's actively engaged with the company, eventually people are going to realize, you know, when it comes to going for an internal promotion, let's say, and it's you versus somebody else, that's just the kind of thing that will give you the upper hand. You have a personal brand online, but also you're actively engaged with the company and you seem to really care. So there's so many different benefits you can communicate, but just so often when program managers are inviting people, they'll just say, we want you to do this because we want our content to go the extra mile. It's like, that's great for the company, but you have to make it valuable to employees. Otherwise, they just won't see the value.
Yeah. And unless you're going to either financially incentivize people or give them big rewards for it, they're not just going to share content because it benefits the company. It's literally as simple as that. But I think the problem is with legacy employee, the concept of employee advocacy has been around longer than we have as a company, right? So the original idea of employee advocacy, what it originally was before it was even called that, was we can use our employees as a marketing channel, which, you know, is still true, but it was so one-sided that it was just like, oh, I'm just going to get my employees to share everything and that'll be great for the company. But why would somebody actually do that? And especially when they get turned into a walking billboard and it's so obviously company-centric content being pushed out by employees. And I think that has actually harmed the industry long-term because people actually, when they think about employee advocacy, that's their immediate position. But the interesting thing with that is confirmation bias, because if that's what you think about it, when you see it done like that, it reaffirms that's what employee advocacy is. We're kind of playing around with this idea of having the concept. So we use, from a sales perspective, when we're selling to our clients, we have, as all companies do, a concept of an ideal client profile, which is who can we approach who we think we would add value to, who would make a good client to us. So what we're starting to do with clients is use this idea of an ideal advocate profile, which is who inside your organization is actually the person that can benefit from this and in turn will benefit the company. So easy example is a salesperson. Salespeople get paid commission based on deals they close. So if you can give them something which helps them close deals, they benefit from it and the company benefits because revenue grows. That's a good example of a good advocate profile, ideal advocate profile. Where it falls short is if you say, oh, I just want everyone in the company to share all bits of content, regardless of what job they do. It works for a little bit, but because there's no real value behind it, it kind of can fall apart. I think that was a very valid enemy of employee advocacy. And I've got one that actually kind of links onto that.
Good segue.
It is a good segue, yeah. It's a skill. So mine is people who use employee advocacy as a job board, which I think is kind of the same one as you did, but it's slightly different. So what can happen, and it happens less now, I would say 4 years ago it would happen very frequently, is that obviously if you're going to advertise for a role, you have to pay LinkedIn to do that. So if you can get your employees to share your job ads, that's a much cheaper way of making people aware of opportunities within the organization. And it's fine to do that. But the bit that I actually think is the enemy is when people fail to put context around it first. So if you're going to share job ads, and let's say we'll use the example of an engineer, right? So if you're an engineer, the probability is you went to university with other engineers that went on to work at other companies. So if I am an engineer and I share a job ad for an engineer at my company, my audience is relevant. But if I haven't done any work beforehand talking about why my company is a place that people would want to work, then the job ad is just a bit of content that won't get any reach. So I would always say that for every one job ad you're sharing via your employees, you probably need to be sharing 10 other pieces of content, which are about the employer experience, what it's like to work in the organization, what the value is, the mission, all those kind of things. So when you do share the job ad, people actually want to apply for it.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing with that as well is people that make that mistake will often use, so this is probably a separate enemy in itself, but the language that they use when they're writing posts for their colleagues to share. So if it's these job posts, for example, they write like the company would write. So the captions are always like super robotic.
Yeah.
And it's they always say we, and they're using like the company buzzword. I can't think of any off the top of my head. Also, I don't really want to call anybody out, but it's so you can spot it a mile off, but it ultimately harms your employee advocacy program as well, because put yourself in the shoes of the person who's seeing that piece of content in their feed from that employee. It looks so inauthentic. Like nothing says my company told me to post this, like never posting about how good it is to work there. And then suddenly you're posting a very robotic message about a new job opening. So it's kind of like a double whammy, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think employee advocacy should be about enabling people who want to be active on social as opposed to just forcing everybody to do it. And obviously, we speak about that a lot. But it does surprise me how many people struggle to, I guess, think about the user, the advocate, and what that text actually looks like when they share it. So they will say, oh, I don't like it when companies put corporate jargon, but then they do it themselves because they feel like that's the right thing to do. But I think that's changing a bit now. I think the maturity of the market is interesting, because if you think, I compare what an employee advocacy program is against sales enablement tools, just because my background is in sales. So I think about things like Outreach and Sales Loft, where they're email sequencing tools, and arguably they're kind of coming to the end of their cycle and they probably need to reinvent themselves. But when email sequencing first started, the technology was one thing. How sophisticated people were at using it was a completely different curve. It's probably 4 years behind the tech. So people just spamming people on email with, sending the same email to 1,000 people was what they would have done at the start. And I feel like that's what employee advocacy was. But I think there's a new generation of people who are adopting the technology and actually saying, actually, there's a smarter way we can use this. We can be more strategic. So, which I think is a good thing.
Definitely. You've kind of, something you said before has kind of segued me onto my
another segue. One.
And I promise to anybody listening to this, we genuinely didn't know what each other's points were going to be. But something,
see, now you said that, and people are going to assume that you didn't. It's like when a comedian says, oh, this is a true story.
Yeah, you know well, it's not.
It isn't. So, yeah. But we genuinely didn't know, I promise.
We genuinely didn't. But yeah, so what you were saying before about people failing to kind of take a step back and put themselves in the shoes of somebody who's viewing that in somebody's feed. My third enemy of employee advocacy was, and this is the one that I said I'd have to explain, is greed. And what I mean by that is often program managers will launch an employee advocacy program, or a company will launch an employee advocacy program, and they want to see results fast, which is great. Obviously, you want this thing to get off to the best start. You want to see maximum results. That's obviously your goal. That's great. But what they fail to do is limit the number of times that employees can share per day. So let's use LinkedIn as an example, and let's use Disseminate as the example, because within Disseminate, you can choose how many times employees can share through the platform per day. And the reason that we offer that is because if your employees are posting, let's say 5 to 10 times per day, and you're encouraging that, whether that's by saying share as much as you can because we want to get this piece of content out there, or maybe you've offered an incentive that's caused this to happen. So let's say you're using a gamification tool, like you're running a leaderboard within the platform for people who share the most, and maybe there's a prize for whoever tops that leaderboard at the end of the week. And as a result, people are sharing 5 to 10 times per day because they want to get all those shares out. what you'll see to begin with is an increase, because obviously your program will start to go up and up and up, because you'll see shares go up, clicks will start to go up. That will then plateau very quickly, and it will actually have an inverse effect, and it will start to go down. So the performance will rapidly decrease. The reason for it, I mean, there's two reasons. People will quickly realize it's inauthentic. If you go from not posting at all to all of a sudden you're posting 5 to 10 times per day, even, you know, 3 times per day, I think can be a bit much. It looks inauthentic. People will stop engaging with your content, but that has a double whammy effect, because LinkedIn's algorithm then says, hold on, you're posting a lot. Nobody really cares about the content that you're sharing. Nobody's engaging with it. And as a result, your future posts are shown to less people. And that's why, obviously, like I said, it plateaus, but that's where the decrease starts to happen. So it's great that you want to see people sharing more and you want to get as many clicks, you know, right out of the gate as possible. That's amazing, but do it strategically and do it within reason. Don't get greedy from the start and think, you know, I'm going to ask people to share as much as they possibly can, and then I'm going to take the first week's performance to, I don't know, the CMO for validation or whatever it is. Limit if you can. I think that's one of the most important things, is just limiting the amount of times they can share for authenticity's sake and for the longevity of your program as well.
Yeah, absolutely. People sharing 5 pieces of content a day, especially if every single one of those pieces of content is just a link to another piece of content, is definitely not something people want to do. I think one of the problems that's caused by that is actually gamification. So obviously, I have to tread a little bit carefully, because we have gamification in the platform, but gamification is great if it's an afterthought and it's a kind of thank you. When it becomes the primary objective, it just alters the way that people view the idea of employee advocacy. And we've seen it where we've had customers who have launched with gamification and they put such an emphasis on it that even when we get a support ticket, people will refer to it as the game, and they will say, my, you know, how do I win the game? And it's like, well, there's no game to win. But then it just encourages people just to not think about what they're sharing, to just post 10 times a day just because they think they might get an Amazon voucher. And it's just not a sustainable way of doing it. So I think it comes back into that idea of being more selective over the people that you actually bring into the platform and educating them on why they would do it for themselves and not just to win an Amazon voucher.
Yeah. And also, it's not only does it appear inauthentic because suddenly they're sharing 5 to 10 times per day, or let's just say more than 3, chances are they're also just not taking the time to add their own spin on that piece of content. So the beautiful thing about an employee advocacy program is that you can provide, again, I'm speaking about Disseminate here, but you can provide captions for your colleagues to use when they're sharing. Perks of doing that, obviously, they can then share without having to think about it. They can just jump in. There's content ready to share. It's pre-approved by, you know, yourself or the program manager. But you want to encourage them to kind of have their own take and to write their own captions. That's there for convenience, but you want to encourage them to share authentically. And if you've done a good job of communicating the employee benefits, then they should be doing that anyway, because they want to add their own take. They want to build their personal brand. But if they are sharing 3+ times, then it's just very quickly going to get, you know, they're clearly not putting any thought into it.
It looks horrendous. I mean, I've tested posting every day, and I've tested posting twice a day, and even testing twice a day, it has a big impact on reach, because as soon as you share something, it basically cancels out the growth you were getting from the last post. So if you share 5 things a day, you're basically giving your post an hour before you cancel it. So yeah, I think that's a good one. My final enemy of employee advocacy is internal communication teams, and I'll explain why. So they're not always, but there's a big misconception in employee advocacy that it's an external function and it's an external channel, and it isn't true. So what can happen is, if you work in marketing, so there's a blurred line between marketing, employer branding, and even internal communications. They're all communications functions, but doing basically a different task, right? So an internal communications team is really there to educate their workforce about what's going on in the company, the mission, the value, all those kind of things. And your external function, marketing team, are there to take a message which we want to broadcast to the outside world. And we're going to do that in, you know, through social and events or whatever we do. So sometimes an internal communication team, if they see that somebody wants to launch an employee advocacy program, especially if that program involves an app, they will see it as competition against their internal communication function, their intranet or whatever. And it becomes a bit of an internal tassle. Tassle, is that a word? Tassle? Tackle?
Don't know. Yeah, it works.
Argument between marketing and internal comms, where they are almost fighting for that space of having the app. But in reality, when we looked at it, and it was some time ago, it was about a year ago, we looked at what percentage of interactions and clicks and comments were coming from internal people when somebody shares content externally, and it was over 30%. So what that means is that if your senior leadership are sharing content on social media, they're actually reaching the workforce that is an internal workforce. So it's an external channel that has internal value. And actually, when you compare that against the percentage of people who are logging to an intranet on a regular basis, you could argue that employee advocacy is a more effective internal communications tool than most internal communications tools. It's just done using an external channel.
It's a really interesting one, actually. I can think about times where that's happened in the past, where it's not something, you know, we work relatively closely together, but let's say you shared something to social, it could be a piece of industry news or something like that that I might not have seen, but I can absolutely see how if you're in a bigger company, it could be something that the sales team shared. I don't know. And somebody from marketing has seen it and suddenly they're a bit more clued up about something that's going on in sales. So it's an interesting one. It's not one that I actually considered, to be honest.
Yeah. It's kind of like if you worked for a public company, obviously you've got earnings calls that happen quarterly, and that is probably the best way to get your internal news, right? Because that is the truth. It's what you can't lie to those calls. They're very important. So if your CEO goes on there and says that revenue is down, then that is true. If internal communication says everything's fantastic, there's no validating that. So most people who work for a public company will, you know, not most, but a large proportion of them will tune in when they do their earnings calls, because that is internal news. So I think employee advocacy can be very similar to that.
Definitely. Yeah, I was going to finish up by saying about a few of the resources that we'll pop in the description or below, or, you know, wherever you're listening to this podcast, it'll be in the show notes description. But that's probably something we can include in there, right, Brad? That piece of research we put together?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was a social post that went out. It's probably something we could redo, actually, and see how that's changed. Obviously, this probably was during COVID, so it'd be interesting to see what that data looks like now in the kind of hybrid workforce thing.
Definitely. Well, with regards to the points I mentioned, we've actually put together a social media policy template, just so that if anybody out there needs to update their social media policy, you can download our template, build on it, edit it, take away from it, whatever. It's just some ideas so that you guys can kind of get the creative juices flowing and include whatever else you need to include. But it's just a guide there for what we think is necessary. So we'll pop that in the description. And I'll pop a link as well to a guide that we've got on what we consider to be the comprehensive guide to the most common employee advocacy mistakes and how to avoid them.
Awesome. And then if anyone wants to get in touch with us, LinkedIn's always the best way to do it. Appreciate everyone taking the time to listen to this podcast today or watch this podcast. And any feedback you've got, please feel free to send it over. Thanks for tuning in.
Cheers, guys.